Pete Bauer, welcome to Breakfast with Refilwe. We're so excited to discuss this interesting phenomenon with you of rising smallholder living. It seems to be a new wave in, I suppose, human collective living. What have your perspectives been on this?
Well, good morning, Refilwe, and good morning to your listeners. You're absolutely correct, but there are different kinds of smallholder. And I think that there are basically three. First of all, they're what you're talking about, the lifestyle smallholder, somebody who wants to get away from the hustle and bustle, perhaps can work remotely and wants to live more sustainably and grow their own vegetables and that sort of thing. And then there's a new whole new category of smallholder, which is being developed by the government to hopefully alleviate poverty and regional food insecurity. And that's, the government is doing a huge amount to resettle previously disadvantaged farmers and people who want to farm onto what are basically small holdings. So there's a huge sort of growth in the smallholder market, if you like, from both ends, from the lifestyle smallholder and from this new developing sector that the government is punting.
Well, let's talk about that one that's driven a little bit more by government and the potential for it to not only, as you rightly outline, contribute to food security, but also to alleviate housing constraints that we seem to have in mostly urban centres. What percentage do you think of, I suppose, the overrun of people requiring housing might a smallholder community or a smallholder market be able to take on?
Look, in numbers, it's going to be very small. But in terms of regional food security, of poverty alleviation and that sort of thing, I think the potential is absolutely huge. You resource somebody correctly and give them, you know, the right backup and so on, and put somebody energetic enough on say, 10 hectares of land, and they can develop for themselves a very nice, comfortable, not millionaire lifestyle, but certainly a sustainable living for them and their extended family. And so doing, provide sufficient that will, alleviate any question of food insecurity in the immediate community and the surrounding villages and so on. So there is a huge potential for that sort of development. The problem, of course, is that it's, you know, the old story of acquiring the land, carving it up, making it workable, and so on.
Your magazine historically focused on Gauteng, but now has a much bigger nationwide footprint. What areas of the country would you see this taking hold?
Well, for example, the president was up in Limpopo, on the border of Limpopo and Mpumalanga last month, I think, handing out title deeds in an area called Tafelkop, which is near Marble Hall. It's actually quite difficult for us to identify where these individual areas are, because they are spread throughout the country in areas previously not carved up into small holding land, if you like. But basically, if you look at just about any South African city or urban area, on the periphery, there will be one, two, or more areas of small holdings, 20, 30, 40, 50, 500, depending on the city. And then, of course, there's a huge regional difference. So a small holding up in Gauteng, where we are, is a completely different kettle of fish to 5 acres of the winelands, which, you know, could be a small holding. It might be a riding school, might be a wedding venue. But the earning potential of land down there is considerably different to the earning potential of land up here, or, for example, to the earning potential of 25 hectares of Karoo.
One of the things that would obviously be important, particularly depending on, as you rightly say, which province you're in, you know, I'm not familiar with Tafelkop near Limpopo, for example, but certainly is the infrastructural support that we have there, whether it be, workable roads, the availability of workable roads, and certainly electricity, sanitation. To what extent is government already set up in those kinds of places, and to what extent does that still need to be developed?
Well, that's one of the issues. Before you start settling, say, 20 or 30 families on 10-hectare small holdings, you do need some kind of basic infrastructure. Obviously, a reasonable power supply is helpful. We tend to take care of our own water and sanitation. The roads will tend to be dirt roads, and you can always tell a smallholder in town because his car is filthy, dirty, and dusty. And that's sort of part of our you know, the banes of our life. But there we are. But we do on small holdings tend to be a little bit more self-sufficient when it comes to sort of basic services and so on. But yeah, electricity is a huge issue for us, obviously, and certainly any kind of farming that requires light or heat. It becomes an issue. Solar power makes it a huge lot easier than it used to be. Water will tend to have boreholes in most cases. Sanitation, it's either septic tanks or some sort of system like that, you know, and we do take care of ourselves to a large extent. So the problems that smallholders have are very different to those that an urban resident would have. And that's one of the subjects that we are constantly writing about in our magazine is to give readers the necessary knowledge and information as to where they can lay their hands on what they need for a decent septic system and so on.
That seems to be, you know, as you said, septic systems, dirt roads seem to be quite simple. Just let's get back to the power issue. To what extent does last week's announcement have an impact on you in terms of being able to generate, let's say, within a region of small holdings, a decent amount of power independently?
It's not. If you look at that announcement, what the president wants is he wants mines and refineries and people who, you know, factories that generate a huge amount of steam or hot air or something to utilize that to generate electricity via steam turbines or whatever. It's not going to affect us directly. What it will do, of course, for all of us, you and us as well, is it will alleviate the crisis that we have surrounding load shedding, which of course is an absolute pain for us all. You know, you and us together. Mm. And yes, we by now, if you're on a small holding and you haven't got a suitable generator thundering away in the background when there's a power failure, well, frankly, you know. Personally, I think you're nuts. Nothing is going to work on a small holding without electricity. All our water is pumped in some shape or form. All of that needs electricity. And frankly, to spend, you know, 8 hours a week sitting in the dark with no water is no fun in town. It's certainly no fun out here. Yeah.
Finally, Peter, you know, you write in your magazine about security and things of that nature, which I think is paramount in many South Africans' minds. Over the weekend, I think I saw a case of a beekeeping space that was vandalized, and it seems to be a trend that's picking up just outside Pretoria in this particular case. What are your thoughts? And of course, there's the constant refrain around farm murders. What's your sense around security in the smallholding community?
I think it varies very much from area to area. It varies over time. Areas suffer crime waves of varying severity, and then, you know, the police step in and heighten their awareness, and the problem sort of tends to go away. But Rafiwa, I honestly believe, and I've been on a small holding now for nearly 35 years, I honestly believe that crime on a small holding area is no worse than it is in town. No worse than it is out in the far rural areas.
Encouraging. Thank you so much. Pete Bauer, publisher and editor of South African Smallholder Online. Go to sasmallholder.co.za to check out a bit more about that. Pete, thank you so much for joining us.